Hello, you're listening to the Doctor Who Review Show 2015.
If I had to describe Doctor Who Series 9 in one word, it would be dark. As a predominantly new Who viewer, obviously I've seen darkness in Doctor Who before, but this series took it to a whole new level, and we saw some really, really dark themes explored, like death, loss, sacrifice, and it just felt really different to me. Personally, I think I prefer a little more lightheartedness in Doctor Who, but that's probably just me. As far as the finale, it was pretty cool. I always enjoy seeing Gallifrey. And hey, two TARDISes. That's pretty awesome. I am very curious to see where they'll take it with the next season, and is Clara really dead? And who will be the new companion?
Like just about every episode, and certainly most season finales since the show came back, we've come away from Hellbent with an awful lot of mixed feelings. There were some great bits, there were some question marks, but for me, the thing I'm taking away from that episode, and I think it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, was that TARDIS that Clara and Ashilda have ended up in, modelled exactly on the console room of the First Doctor. The thing gleamed and shone and sparkled, and it looked so wonderful. And you see it, and then you see the 12th Doctor get dropped off back at his TARDIS. And yeah, you know, I've never warmed to this particular TARDIS interior, but that white one, that's what I want to see the Doctor travelling in again, because that is a proper TARDIS console room, and I thought that looked absolutely gorgeous.
Hello everybody, welcome to Arc 9, my name's Beth.
I'm Andy.
And we are honoured to be joined by Russ Leach.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm yes, honoured. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us on this final After Nine of the series. Before we get going, we've got a double header episode today. We're going to review Heaven Sent and Hellbent. But for anyone who doesn't know or isn't familiar with the illustration work of Mr. Russ Leach, would you like to tell us a little bit about your connection to Doctor Who and the work that you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm currently the artist on Panini's incarnation of Doctor Who Adventures. I produce the nine-page strip for the Four Weekly Comic magazine, and I also do the Paternoster Gang illustrations for the text within the magazine. I also work on some other bits and pieces for Panini. That's about what I do at the moment. So there you go.
How long have you been working on the Doctor Who Adventures?
Since January, I got the word that Immediate Media weren't going to be running the book anymore. And the editor, Jason Quinn, who I'd worked with before on other books, emailed me and said, did I fancy doing it? And of course, I didn't take long to answer. Of course I fancied doing it. And that was it. Off we went. So I've been working since January. I'm in the middle of inking issue 11 at the moment. Like I say, apart from some other stuff that I'm working with on Panini, with Panini. And yeah, it's going great guns at the moment.
So it sounds, when you were offered it, it sounds like you were already quite fond of Doctor Who before taking on the job.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it never occurred to me that I would draw Doctor Who for a living. I've done a few things in the past. I've had another life in art direction and the internet and stuff like that. And I decided I was going to go back to illustration. So I dedicated myself to that. And of course, the target is something like in Britain, maybe 2000 AD. In America, it was DC and Marvel. And that was where I was heading, or I was hopefully heading. It never occurred to me that I'd get a shot at Doctor Who. But when I was a kid, Doctor Who was up there. It was Doctor Who and Star Trek. And then, you know, Star Wars came along afterwards. And being very young, it's one of the first things I can remember from the TV is stuff like Doctor Who. And I absolutely loved it. Tom Baker was really my doctor, although I have a soft spot for Pertwee as well. And funnily enough, I think there's... the current Dr. Capaldi is reminiscent of Tom Baker, sometimes even sounds a bit like him, I think. So it was an absolute treat, and it was also completely out of the blue. I wasn't expecting it to happen. I don't think anybody was at the time. So to have that shoot across my email inbox floored me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The chance to be able to draw Doctor Who was like, yes. Quite apart from the fact that I think I've kind of coined this phrase before. He's like a British Mickey Mouse. Everybody knows Doctor Who. He's a global phenomenon. So it's right up there with drawing something like, I don't know, Captain America or the Avengers or what have you. It really is up there. And I love the fact that I got to draw for a younger generation as well, because obviously the Doctor Who Adventures is aimed at kids. Or at least younger readers. That's what it's aimed at. Although obviously a lot of people seem to like the magazine, and the way that Jason has aimed it, it doesn't talk down to kids, but it gives them, you know, something to get into. And the magazine is fantastic now, and the stories. Recently, I've worked with a guy called James Peaty and Tommy Donovan, Scream Street. Writer, so there's been some great, you know, comic strip and kids writers getting involved in the strips. So it's heaven. It's great.
Out of interest, we're at an interesting point in the actual TV series of Doctor Who now, where Christmas special aside, there's potentially quite a big gap before the next series, and you're going to have strips filling that gap, and you've just talked about how you're obviously ahead of us with the ones that you're inking. How do continuity issues such as Clara and things like that, how do they impact on yourself and the rest of the creative team of the comic?
Yeah, we kind of got a heads up on Clara and when she was going. So the last issue I drew with Clara in it was issue 8. 9 has just come out, and obviously Clara's nowhere to be seen in that. So what happens then is the writers are, at the moment, what they're doing is they're throwing in a companion every month.
Ooh.
So we have lots of different characters coming in and out, and so these characters are obviously being added to the canon. Because we produce a single story, and it's kind of a bit of a shot in the arm of Doctor Who fun, It isn't too attached to the canon that you have to refer to things in the show or refer to really serious events. But it does mean that we can add these characters in and we can have fun with them. And maybe later on they'll be used again, which would be that would be really cool.
How are you creating those characters there? Is there like dream casting from the writers, or do you have photographic references, or are they completely created feet up?
No, the writer says, I'd quite like this particular supporting character to be a girl with blue skin. Off you go. and then the next one, actually, the one I did for issue 10 was based in Tokyo. So it was literally just people, you know, indigenous people from the area. So we had some Japanese supporting cast, which was brilliant, because I get to draw all kinds of creeds and races of humans, but I also get to do lots of wild and wacky stuff with aliens as well. So it's great fun. Yeah,
that's brilliant. I have one more question about working within the comic. With obviously the guidelines that the writer sent you saying I'd like it to be female with blue skin, do you ever find yourself, because of your familiarity with the show, you know, from Pertwee and Tom Baker onwards, and your own sort of emotional connection, do you ever find yourself influenced by your own fandom or slipping things in from the past for yourself rather than just...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not allowed to draw Daleks because we...
Obviously not now, yeah.
Because we have to, you know, we have an IP issue with that. Right from the word go, it was stressed that we had to be careful about the kind of if we had any creatures from the show. Obviously, those creatures would have to appear in the show first that season before we could do anything like that. We've managed to stay away from all those things, but I have popped a few guys in there. I did pop a Zygon in, you know, I put some Ood in there. I drew some jelly babies in the first few issues. Nobody's spotted those yet. Obviously, it isn't Spock, but it could be Spock. Was in there in one of the early issues. That was my personal... I wanted to do that because Leonard Nimoy had died. So it was my thing to like put him in there. I suppose I'm constantly affected by my past and what's made me to this point. And you're always going to remember, I don't know, the cantina scene from Star Wars, or, you know, the buildings from Blade Runner, or, you know, the aliens on the bridge of the Star Trek Enterprise. Starship Enterprise. It doesn't matter where you're at, as it were. All these things come together, and they do have an effect on you. And while you're drawing a strip for Doctor Who, then obviously that's going to have more of an effect on you than any of the other stories that you've been into, or you know, or shows you've been into. So yes is the answer. Sorry, it's a long answer to a short question.
Right, well, shall we talk about Heaven Sent and Hell Bent then?
Oh,
yeah.
Russ, as our guest, it only seems fair that we ask you to go first. I'm assuming you'd been following the series.
Yeah,
so
I've seen everyone.
Yeah. How did you enjoy the final two episodes? What did you think generally of them? Was there anything that really stood out for you as particularly good or not working?
I made this general note earlier on today. I think from a general perspective, I would say that overall the series, I've absolutely loved it. I think it's been really good. I think haters are going to hate, to coin a phrase. I'm not in that category because I don't want to hate on any show or any creative process, because, you know, there's so many good things to it all. My only criticism of the series would be that it was maybe aimed a little bit too adult, and it wasn't speaking to the youngest audience. That was kind of one of those things that's wrapped up in... I absolutely loved all the episodes. I loved the references they made and the complexity of the story, but I don't think it quite reached the whole audience. That was something I got from several people, from specifically about the... And sorry to go on, but that reference that I've just made is quite prominent in the last two episodes. They were quite adult in a lot of the themes. And again, you don't want to talk down to kids. Of course you don't. You want them to get involved in that kind of storytelling. But it's, you know, sometimes the plots can be just that little bit tricky. However, like I said, I'm being very harsh there. I think even as a kid, certainly older, I would have thoroughly enjoyed them. And I did enjoy them. And I thought is it Heaven Sent, the second from last one?
Mm.
That had a great twist at the end, which if you're a seasoned sci-fi enjoyer, you kind of saw it coming, but I still thought it was particularly well done. I really, really liked it. Not quite sure how having lots of copies of him, there's always this thing in the background of, you know, for instance, in a, if you are beamed from one ship to the other in Star Trek, is that really you or is that a copy of you? And where did the original go? So there is that kind of niggle in the back of your mind from that concept's perspective. But I still loved it. And the last episode, I really did like the twist where I presume everybody knows, and it's not a spoiler issue on a podcast like this.
Oh, don't worry about spoilers.
Right, but the fact that he lost his memory and kind of that was the reverse to what had happened with Donna, I thought that was fantastic. I really liked that concept. I loved the way it worked. Not quite sure how he told the story to her, if he'd forgotten so much, but then maybe the memories were her memories, not his. So you could kind of conjure that up in your own mind.
Well, I think with that one, you can also argue there's the unreliable. There's his statement that, you know, you fill in the gaps of, you know, you fill in the gaps of what's not there. And Clara's been erased from his memory, but the events might not have been erased from his memory. Just there might be a Clara-shaped hole there. But also, something that I didn't get to talk about during the Sleep No after Sleep No More is the concept of the unreliable narrator. So, for anyone who's read The Odyssey or anyone who's seen The Usual Suspects, which is basically the idea that someone is telling a story that you take as fact, and at the very end you realise that there's the potential that they've made up absolutely everything you've just heard. So, for all we know, none of that has actually happened. And all we know is that he doesn't remember Clara. Someone's told him that a woman called Clara has left him there, and he's come up with an idea of how he might have got there. But actually, none of it happened at all.
I see what you're saying, yes. Yeah, there is that potential, yeah.
He also remembered some scenes that he wasn't in.
Yeah.
And they were in the Capitol discussing why he wouldn't come to the Capitol, because he wanted a bigger and bigger welcoming party, or he wanted the president eventually, didn't he? But he didn't. None of that happened. So you see, it's all. He started telling the story, and then they faded in the episode. They were probably happening at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. But I, like I say, I try not to think too much about that kind of thing, and just went along for the ride. Thoroughly, like I say, enjoyed the twist. I like the fact that they kind of almost rejuvenated him and said, "Okay, next series, something else." Which is good. Another general note, I think the production over the whole series has been superb for a network program. I just thought it was fantastic, the design and the special effect production and what have you, but all over production.
I thought it did look great. Heaven Sent especially looked incredible. It really did. Andy.
Hello.
Hello. What did you think?
I think I'm a bit contradictory here, because in Heaven Sent, my favourite shots were the actual TARDIS interiors. Just the panoramic shots of them look beautiful. But I've got to confess I had a few issues with the actual Citadel castle itself. The aerial shots, I don't know, the... Sometimes this, I felt it was a bit more like, it reminded me of Nightmare. It almost felt like going through a computer game, and I just felt personally some little bits didn't match quite on the Citadel, which was a shame. But I spent a lot of time looking at castles and computer drawings, so maybe I'm a bit sullied there. More time looking at computer drawings than castles, I have to confess, unfortunately. It was quite a beautiful piece of television, wasn't it? And I almost felt a bit sad that it's the first time they've ever done just the Doctor on his own, because I was thinking I'd love to have had Tom Baker do this, or you know, any of the other Doctors just have a chance to do even a one-hander. You know, I know We have had doctors talking to themselves a lot in the past and
or
things
cabbages.
Like that. But for just exactly, but just to have had the other doctors do it, it's just, you know.
Mm.
I mean, I hope it's not the last time they do it. I'm sure it won't, because they'll probably want to build on it and do other stuff with it. And now they know it works, so you know.
Do you think people just didn't have the stones to do it until they saw that it could win awards in the Doc Cotton model?
I think it's odd because when you think of things like, I worked with a lot of, stage groups and drama groups, and, you know, monologues are a staple of these things. And you think of things like Talking Heads with Alan Bennett's a good one. But even like, although a lot shorter, you know, you got some of the individual characters in various comedy sketch shows, especially League of Gentlemen, a lot of Matt Gaetz's characters, like the guy who guides people around the caves. So clever, these monologues. Joyce Grenfell used to do them. You know, they captivate audiences if they're done well. So I just don't understand why television doesn't do it so much. I think maybe we just started to push it a little bit further. Then again, Hancock did it, didn't he?
I think, if anything, I was slightly disappointed that we did see Clara in that episode.
Mm.
I don't think, fair enough, have her write on the chalkboard, but I don't think we needed to see her.
No, well, or an actress in a wig.
Yeah, well, she knelt down next to him at the very end.
Oh, of course she did, yes, she did, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you, and even, because I mean, obviously they kept it secret that she was going to be in it, but we had the veil as well in the photographs, and I'm thinking, yeah, are they cheating by having a monster in it? Which, actually, they got away with that, that it worked well, and it was a nice touch because it was a silent character and it worked well. But, you know, I would really go for it. I'd have happily watched 45 minutes of him sat there with his bowl of soup.
Yeah. I don't know...
listen to him.
Speaking of the monster, I don't know if you've read The Rubber Room this week, our very own Kev Jordan's blog. But he's done a great side-by-side of the Doctor closing the door on these long, grey, spiny hands next to a picture from Curse of Fenric of Nicholas Parsons blocking
Excellent.
The door from the Hemivore's hands. And it's uncanny. It's brilliant. And I hadn't even thought about it until he posted that last week. I thought it was a brilliant spot on his part.
It is.
But the last two episodes have been... very reference heavy. Lots of reversing polarity.
It's been a lot in the series as well, though, hasn't there, generally?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of looking back, which has probably pleased a lot of people like us. It may have left some of the newer fans not necessarily picking it up. But I don't see a problem with doing it, because you have to span the whole of your audience. I thoroughly enjoy the self-referencing like that. I think it sucks you in even further.
I have one more question I want to ask. I don't know about Andy, if you've got any in the tank, but how did either of you feel about the way Clara's story ended or begun, if you want to look at it like that?
I really enjoyed the ending of Clara's story. But the thing that worries me about it is that last year when we started the story, the Doctor had a very definitive character and relationship with Clara. And this year there has been mentioned that they've softened the character quite a lot. And changed it and made him more jovial to try making the companion doctor relationship more like it has been maybe with Doctor and Donna or Doctor and Rose, whatever. And I just felt like that was quite a gear change. And I don't know if I quite jumped into that gear change to actually believe that they, you know, do, you know, have this hybrid and they love each other so much and would do this for each other. I think they could have maybe got the pacing a bit better during the series. I know they've got a lot to cram in each episode. I think that's the problem, but that was my feeling about it. I loved the ending about it, but I felt like the journey was a bit bitty.
Yeah, a bit convoluted. I know what you're saying there. It was almost like, this may sound a weird thing to say because I'm not a writer, but it was almost like changing the characters interplay in order to promote the end game of the plot instead of writing the plot around the interplay of the characters, which I could get flamed for. And I'm probably not explaining myself particularly well.
I completely agree with you.
You know, let's make her this action-seeking adrenaline junkie when she was out the side of the TARDIS, and they were all laughing and giggling about it. And I think the Doctor he referenced this. He's got a duty of care, which is why he spent 2 billion years doing what he was doing. I don't think he'd maybe let her fly out the side of the TARDIS. So I don't know, mate, again, probably being picky, but that's what it's all about, isn't it? Looking at these things and trying to see why you enjoy them, why some of them stuck a little bit in your head. But yeah, there was some of that to it. And I know what you mean about suddenly there being this slightly different relationship between the two of them. But then, you know, stories and plots change. They don't just change because that's the way you want to write them. They change because actors stay on or go, or, you know, production changes. And sometimes that has an impact on the way you might write a whole series or an episode. I'm definitely looking forward to the Christmas one. I thought that the trailer absolutely hit the nail on the head. It looked absolutely great fun, which was what I want out of Doctor Who. I want it to be a bit scary sometimes. I want it to be, you know, sort of tug on the heartstrings, but mostly I want a romp. And that's what a lot, in all fairness to all the Christmas specials, they've all been romps of one sort or another. And I wanted to see a proper romp with Capaldi in it. And the trailer looks exactly that way.
Marvellous.
Sorry.
I think I've only got one other thing to ask, which, you know, just something that, I don't know, captures in my mind. How do we feel about where they've left Gallifrey? And did they need to bring it back? You know, was it... one of the things that I really liked about when this series came back was that they had destroyed Gallifrey and... it had been destroyed in the Time War, and I just felt that maybe in this last episode it wasn't actually a necessity, because they were telling the story about him and Clara, and you know the interplay between them and how that ended. It could have happened with another planet, or it could have been, I don't know, if they were going to wheel the Sisterhood of Khan in, it could have taken place there for all we know, and
I mean, there could be the whole narrator thing where it's actually just his narration and they never were on Gallifrey at all.
Well, no, because Clara needed to get her TARDIS.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Of course.
Yes, so you need to find that TARDIS from somewhere. I have to say, seeing the original TARDIS recreated, what a fantastic treat that was. Talk as we were talking about just now about referencing back to old series and what have you, I thought that was really good. Loved that. Just seeing the inside of that. So yeah, I that's why they needed to be there, I suppose. It creates another story for the next series. They need some running story. It's been going on for a while now, hasn't it, where they have this running story through the whole series and then intersperse that story as they go along.
It's funny you say. I mean, a lot's been made of how Ashilda or me or whatever you want to call her can't really come back very often, or can't come back for long because her character's not supposed to age, and now it's been explicitly stated that Clara can't age either. So we've got these two eternally young sort of undead women in a TARDIS that looks like a cafe restaurant at the end of the universe, or I don't know if either of you have seen the last episode of Sapphire and Steel.
I was going to bring this up because you made me chuckle today when you'd put that up on Facebook, because every week as soon as the episode's ended, a couple of people have got in touch with me to ask on my gut feeling or my quick reaction of what the episode was like. And I always just give them one sentence because I think some of them tried to goad me into saying negative things, you know, but which I don't have much so many of them to say. And I just said it was like a jolly version of Sapphire and Steel at the end of it. And then you went and put a status up earlier. And I thought, oh, very good.
Yeah, yeah. It does sound like a sitcom, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Basically
setting
girls.
Big finish up, isn't it, for the future?
Yeah.
But with them not really being able to return to the series for very long if they do ever come back, a lot of people have been talking about the potential for audio stories or lots of fan fiction, lots of slash fiction, two attractive young women in a TARDIS together.
I can already see where that fan fiction's going.
Yeah,
it's just making me slightly uncomfortable.
But I was wondering, well, especially with constant references to her relationship with Jane Austen throughout the series as well.
Yeah.
I was just wondering how... what your opinion, Russ, is on the chances of an illustrated spin-off, a comic book spin-off of the adventures of Dr. Clara and May Ami.
Personally, I think any kind of spin-off from a comic book perspective is a good thing, because there should be more comic books out there and there should be more comic books with characters that people want to see. The demographic is at least nearly there. It's a female lead with a female support. That's a good thing. I think there's a potential for some really good stories. I think they should leave what you were talking about with Jane Eyre and what have you. I think they should kind of leave the whole sexuality thing to one side, because I kind of get bored hearing about it. I don't care what the sexuality is. It really doesn't bother me either way, but I'm more interested in, you know, the stories and the fun, and not sort of going so deep into a character that you have to find those things out. I don't think it makes a lot of difference to the interplay. There's no requirement for it. So yeah, I think that would be good. I know that there have been requests for the Paternoster Gang to have their own comic strip as well. And I actually do the illustrations, like I was saying, for the Paternoster Gang text stories. And funnily enough, there you go, there's a demographic there of you know, alien gay ladies, as it were. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really don't see the need to talk about that kind of thing, because that's just if you make a big deal out of it, you're making more of a deal than needs to be. It's just accepted. Oh, yeah. It's you know, those are the characters, and they're great to draw as well, and I think they should probably get their own comic strip as well, because I think they're a fantastic trio. They're full of action, they're great fun to draw, they're really interesting to look at, and they're very funny. I mean, the foil you get from the Sontaran is very funny. He says some particularly silly things in the stories that I get to illustrate, and constantly referring to men as women and women as men, which is I don't know how much they put into that, but that is great as well. It's just this whole confusion, and is great fun. So yeah, I think it would make a Clara comic strip would probably be quite cool. And like I say, so a Pat Gang comic strip would be great as well. So and like I say, more comics the better, because kids and adults need to read comics. It's as simple as that. That's my statement, and I'm standing by it.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Well, and on the subject of reading more comics, when is the next Doctor Who Adventures out? When can we read your stuff next?
Yeah, it's the next one. There was one out this week, or just this week, just gone, which is brilliant. Everybody must buy it.
I've got it here.
It's got a great Dalek...
exclusive Dalek poster.
Dalek blaster as well.
Oh, yeah.
I've played with the Dalek blaster, and the poster is phenomenal. You must excuse me, I've forgotten the artist's name. I think he works on Robot City, is it? I must apologise to him. I've forgotten his name. I will find out. But the poster is fabulous. I've got it up now. Mm. It's really, really good. And the magazine is great fun. And obviously there's a strip in there, which is good fun. And then the next one will be out on the 7th of January, I think. No.
Yeah, issue 10, 7th of January.
Yes, 7th of January. There you go. I think it's a 5-week wait rather than a 4-week because obviously Christmas and what have you. But anybody out there should go and buy the one that's out right now and put it in a Christmas stocking because it's got a Dalek blaster. If anything, nothing else, it's got a Dalek blaster. You can't go wrong.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Ross. It's been such great fun chatting with you.
No problem. Thank you for listening to my name dribble.
Ah, marvellous stuff.
And I think that's goodbye from this series for After Nine.
It is, yes.
Hi, it's Al, and I'm here with...
The me.
You're going to keep that up?
I'm going to keep that up until it starts being funny.
All right, okay. Well, we've just watched Heaven Sent.
Yes.
What did you think?
I think it's a terrible name.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think?
Well, what about the Doctor's descent into the underworld? I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Even having seen Cube Triangle, The Prestige, Time Crimes and Dark City.
Oh, you'd already written down The Prestige?
Yeah.
Before I told you it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right, well, I think if we were just going to say positive stuff, I think we'd kind of need to say positive things about Peter Capaldi's performance.
Yeah, I can't even put it into words. He just had to talk to himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it really well.
Mm-hmm. It was great. And... the moment, Groundhog Day, and I think we got
it. Gets away with the Groundhog Day element though, because it uses it in a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
It uses it in a really clever way.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Stephen Moffat should get, well, some praise or maybe an award for that.
Really?
Yeah, it was good. Well, that's the one he's been building for. That's the one he wants the award for, isn't it? And next week, of course, with Gallifrey being back and everything. So the hybrid, did that come as a shock?
That was a very big surprise.
How long have we been predicting that now? 11 weeks?
Well, I think I'm going to have a heart attack and die from that surprise.
Uh-huh. And that's why he left Gallifrey, and that'll turn out he'll be half human on his mother's side and so on, you know. Do you think he's going to regenerate next? Who's regenerating, do you think?
Clara.
Probably Clara. Ooh, could be, couldn't it? Yeah. I think also, fair play to Murray Gold.
Do you think he did well in that one?
I thought the music was really good, yeah. I like the little tiny moment that sounded just like...
It sounded like Peter Davison stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of going back, that sort of callback to it.
It was a sort of keyboard synthesizer type music.
Yeah, yeah, it had that kind of air to
it. As opposed to the orchestral music.
So I suppose technically I was right and it was a multi-doctor episode.
Yes, with many, 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 many doctors.
Yeah.
Hopefully that episode actually starts about a third of the way through.
Yeah, well, it could...
Well, actually...
7,000... No, 2,000 years in?
It's so, 7,000, but I was trying... But it takes place over, like, 20 million, so it's a little bit less than a third, you know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't start at the start.
No, no, oh, no, it doesn't.
Because it wouldn't have been as effective.
Yeah. But then the film Triangle doesn't start at the start either.
No, but you said the trailer spoils everything with that anyway.
Yeah, it does, it does. Yeah, I thought that was really good. I'm looking forward to next week now. There's not much else you can really say beyond that, other than it was great.
Yeah. Something... I am glad they didn't show it as well.
Well, the act, the veil.
The veil.
The creature, yeah.
Yeah, because that is something that's a lot scarier about the unknown.
Yes, well, yeah, it is. The thing you don't show is more frightening.
And
it?
I love that concept of being able to see what it sees, but not being able to see it.
Mm.
Because there is a boss in The Legend of Zelda, The Phantom Hourglass,
mm-hmm.
that does that. But for such a short period of time that you wonder why they even did it. It's just this invisible crab thing.
Yeah.
But you can see what it sees on the top screen.
Oh,
and
right.
And you have to try and line it up. And it's done... I really liked it, but He lasts, like I said, about 10 seconds. But that did it quite effectively, because he's got to spend ages trying to figure out how it all works, where it is at all times,
yeah,
how he can get away from it for the maximum amount of time.
You don't remember the butler from Tomb Raider, do you, from the training levels?
Sadly not.
Okay. Well, I don't think there's much else we can say here. No. We'll have to wait till next week now, really. Because this is another... It's the middle part of a three-parter, isn't it?
What was with the bit with all the arrows pointing to the sand?
I'm not 100% sure about that. I don't know. Because he didn't seem to do anything with it, did he?
No. And
we don't see him drawing the arrows.
No.
And we don't see who wrote I'm in 12.
Well, he must have written. He must have written that.
And then buried it. Because it resets, doesn't it?
Yeah, but... Which is weird, because why did it reset and leave that written under there? If that room with the arrows reset, then why are the arrows still there?
I don't know.
And why... It doesn't entirely reset, because, for instance, the clothes were still there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, at one point, the very first doctor to have gone there must have just wandered around naked after leaving his clothes there.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way they can have been left by the fire. But that is cool how they repeatedly traded them off.
Mm-hmm.
So it does explain why they didn't, like, rot or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, because it's an ongoing process that just goes on and on and on and on. Yeah.
I feel like falling into the lake would have been not exactly a terrifying experience for the first 20 or so of them,
mm-hmm.
till the skulls started becoming visible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was clever. Stephen Moffat's kind of declared that the one he's going to write at Christmas was going to be the final one he was initially going to write. So I think what we're going to see here is, even though he's going to carry on because he's been persuaded to stay or whatever.
Yeah, this is going to be what he's always been building up to.
Yeah, this is wrapping it up. This is really now. This is the end of the Time War. Next.
Well, that was brilliant.
It was, wasn't it? It was excellent. I'm hoping next week's is as good. And seeing as I think, because you were saying about the magic beans and the not spending necessarily so much money, I think the money's been spent on next week's episode. And I think that's why in the series we've had so much talking and everything. I think it has been building up towards this.
Yeah, the talking's been effective, though.
It has. Yeah, it's good.
I haven't even commented on the Harder Than Crystal Wall, but that is amazing.
It was good, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's really clever.
When he's just bashing his way through it over time. Speleogenesis, making a cave.
The fact that after 7,000 years, there's still been no dent in it.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And on that bombshell.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello.
It's your turn.
Hi, I'm the him.
And I'm not.
I'm here with...
I'm the him.
Okay, and I'm Al. And
no, no, you're me.
No, I'm not. She's me.
You're the who. You're more specific.
More specific. And we've just finished watching Hellbent.
Uh-huh. I haven't seen Hellbent. Why are they called that?
Well, it's because Clara had to descend into the underworld with the god, as we predicted last year, who would then save her and bring her back. So that's how it worked. So it all kind of paid off.
But the names!
I know,
the
I
names!
Know. Well, he became the man with no name because it was a Western and we had standoffs and Back to the Barn and Echoes of the Dr. Donna and Four Knocks and Back to Listen and...
Well, that's because it was meant to be his last one.
Yeah.
So he wanted to...
Stephen Moffat, do you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose...
No. It was just you said his last one. Yeah, because, well, that's what he'd said and that, well... That was kind of like his final statement, and then the Christmas special was going to be sort of the... Well, it looks like it was going to be the epilogue, because that really just wraps... That wraps up the last 10 years, as much as anything. Clara's now basically the Doctor.
It's even got a decent picture on iPlayer.
The shot of him walking away from Gallifrey with the guitar.
The giant bubble. In fact, Gallifrey very much represents a Gungan bubble, doesn't it?
What, the underwater one?
Yes.
Space Glasgow is all right, I suppose. The get off my planet line, which is from Battlefield, was pretty good, you know, in its own way. It sort of worked. There's an echo of Rory the Roman, again, you know, with the waiting forever. He does like his kind of, like, people waiting forever. And the whole thing about the Dr. Donna and the forgetting thing. And there was a quote from Terence Dix in there, you know, never cowardly, never cruel, and everything. That was paraphrasing Terence Dix about... basically telling Clara she has to go off and be a doctor. So that essentially kind of explains, well, that was it, wasn't it? That was very much Stephen Moffat's, once again, that's his final statement on the series, wasn't it, really?
Well, we've still got the Christmas special.
Yeah, but it wraps everything up. That was it. That's the conclusion. It's not the conclusion to this particular series. That's the conclusion to, the last 50 years, 52 years.
How do you think he'll reboot it?
How do you think it? Well,
for the third time in the past 2 years.
I think it'll depend on what the new companion's going to be. I think the new companion's going to make a big difference.
You don't think it'll be River?
No, I don't think it'll be River. I've got other sorts of ideas. So, the hybrid?
Maybe it'll be the hybrid.
Maybe it'll be the hybrid. So,
whatever the hell a hybrid was.
It was the Doctor. We got it right.
That was so vague.
I've got to say something about the whistling Morricone bit.
You had this weird back and forth where the Doctor and Ashley Dear were both trying to convince each other that the other one was the hybrid.
Well, that, I think that was a bit of Stephen Moffat having a go at the audience again, going, ah, see.
That's what I said beforehand. It's like, because it comes across as seeming just like, oh, okay, well, it means it's him. But then, no, wait, no, it's a double bluff. But yeah. No, it's a triple bluff because he never calls for that. And then, no, wait, but it's Stephen Moffat. So, until you reach the point where you're, you know.
And then it's really impressive, but you still don't get your watch back. It's a good trick, but you don't. I do think that we were also right that a lot of the talky scenes in the preceding 11 weeks were in order to save
any
up
seats being, any scenes being set in talky.
Madam, that is talky. Do you remember all the herds of wildebeest and the hanging gardens of Babylon? No, and I think that was in order to pay for that because it felt quite expensive. So the Time Lord who got lost in the cloisters was obviously the William Hartnell Doctor, I would have said. Would you agree with that?
What was up with the cloisters?
I don't know.
What was up with the terrible firewalls?
The sliders.
The shufflers. And the sliders.
Yeah, not the smilers.
Not the shufflers.
No. And it was done as a Western. I thought that Peter Capaldi was excellent throughout that.
Yeah, but has there been any point where you can fault Peter Capaldi's performance?
No. I think he's got better and better as it's gone on. I think he really enjoyed doing that. And the kind of like the turning on its head, so it was Clara who remembered. And do you like the idea that Clara's got a TARDIS?
It's like the DARDIS.
Mm. But both Clara and Ashilia, that's the end of their story now, because it's been pointedly stated that neither of them will age. So they can't come back.
Well, they can come back, but they'd have to do it soon.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. That's it. It's over and done with the thing. Right, now the other question is, do you think it was a success?
Do I think it was a success?
Yeah, Hellbent, do you think it was a success?
What do you mean?
Was it good?
It was okay.
It held your attention. Was it as good as Heaven Sent?
No.
Right.
But it was better than Sleep No More.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yes, it was rather better than Sleep No More.
I don't think it was quite as good as Face the Raven.
Really?
Really.
It really held your chest. Do you know the bit that made you grin and made me think, oh, go on, please, 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 was when he stole the TARDIS, and it was the original TARDIS, and it was just, oh, please keep that one. Uh-huh. And your face just lit up in a massive grin.
But he couldn't keep that one, though, because the other one, the broken chameleon circuit makes it iconic.
Yeah, exactly.
If he kept that one, then, you know, he'd be... Why did it turn into a diner?
Oh, because the chameleon circuit works. But because the diner
is that what blends in?
Well, yeah, because it's over the hill from where Lake Silencio was, because that's why he was there before.
Is that?
It's the same diner. Yeah.
Is that what blends in? The desert diners
in the middle of nowhere. Well, I don't know. The diner's in the middle of nowhere, and the barn's in the middle of nowhere. But people still seem to turn up at it.
Right, the barn really was like, because initially, right, it's this tiny little space, and he climbs up, and it's like, oh, it's a woman. Wonder where she came from. It's like, oh, then there's 50 people.
Where did they come from? Yeah, yeah. It was an interesting pronunciation of Sheboygan as well. Okay, and on that bombshell, I think that's...
Do you not have anything else you want to say about it?
No,
do you not have any complaints? You've always got complaints.
Murray Gold pushed his luck, but you've got to let him off that. No, it was It was an end.
I saw a little grimace from you at one point, but I don't remember where it was. I think it was probably A Muddy Goal.
It was when he started whistling. That was the bit that I tried earlier as Murray Coney, which you probably won't get.
No,
okay.
Is that like...
It's Ennio Morricone used to do the music for spaghetti westerns. There was a lot of whistling, and the character played by Clint Eastwood in things like The Good and the Bad and the Ugly was known as the Man with No Name, which is of course the Doctor. So it's all very much, it was very Clint Eastwood. It was done as a western, so it was, all those beats were in there very much. So you got the desert and everything. You're either headbanging. I'll have to put the Anthrax version over this, I suppose. Or we could do the Adam and the Ants one. Los Rancheros. That was a good one. And on that bombshell, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, you don't have any complaints at all?
No. Well, it did what it did. Good luck to him next year, but that was it. You know, I do feel that Stephen Moffat probably has been persuaded to stay, because that felt like that was the end of what he wanted to stay. Persuaded to stay. That's what he wanted to say.
What did the shufflers do?
The sliders.
Sure.
They wrap you up in wire.
In fact, what was with the wire? Why he was... Because I felt sorry for that Dalek, right?
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Genuinely did, but... Why was it there?
Missy's theme was in it, but Missy wasn't. But Missy might as well have been in it. Because she was very much part of the final story. She needed to be there to be mentioned. So although she didn't come back...
You sure that wasn't just because it's Muddy Gold track 23?
Oh, well, that's what you said. What's this song called? Well,
Muddy Gold from track 19.
Yeah. Rather than Clara. And on that bombshell, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to us for the last 12 weeks. And we'll...
It's only been like 9 minutes.
It just feels like, yeah. And we'll see you again.
On the flip side.
Ooh.
I feel like that's normally what you'd say. Let's make more camp owl noises.
Camp owl. Do an owl emitting a pellet.
No.
Bye.
Hey Dad, Stephen Moffat's trying to email you.
He's always emailing me. What's it about?
He wants you to direct an episode of Doctor Who, but you're not replying to his emails.
Well, look, put it this way. I reply to the ones I can understand, and some are a bit incoherent. You know, like his scripts. I mean, there's great ones, and there's ones that are not great.
Well, after years of rumour that Peter Jackson might do a Doctor Who episode, we had that cute little video recently where he was sat with his daughter making cracks about Stephen Moffat, and then suddenly Peter Capaldi enters as the Doctor to give him a BBC contract, and, well, we aren't sure by the end of the video what exactly is happening, but common sense suggests that such a video wouldn't have been made unless Peter Jackson is going to direct an episode of Doctor Who in the year ahead. Or two, you never quite know with the schedule for Series 10 being constantly whispered about and under wraps. Yes, there's definitely a full Series 10, they say. No, we can't really tell you when we'll make it, and we definitely don't want to go suggesting when we might show it. So maybe Jackson will be directing in 2016, we'll just have to wait and see. We'll also have to wait and see whether his contribution comes via filming in New Zealand, and if so, whether the New Zealand Tourism Board might be involved, because if Doctor Who was to film in New Zealand, it would be crazy for them not to be on board. And for those not living down here in ANZ, it's an organisation that makes great adverts and really plugs the heck out of New Zealand and, you know, all its attributes, whether it be food or skiing or, you know, whatever it might be. So doing some Doctor Who-inspired marketing would be great for the series too. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. There's no official announcement yet that Jackson's even doing it. Maybe that video was just to test the water. In which case, challenge accepted. I've been giving this some thought, and, you know, if Peter Jackson does do this episode, and he's given an effects-heavy episode, and I suppose some people might assume he would be, I guess he wouldn't be using his pals at Weta, as I assume the BBC budget only stretches so far, and there's in-house and contract work that might already be in place regarding special effects houses and so on. And I guess the overall budget would be nothing like he's been used to since he started work on Lord of the Rings back in the late 90s. And I guess Jackson might find that stimulating on some levels, having to be creative with the budget, having new people to work with. But would it produce something bearing the Peter Jackson name that just didn't look all that flash? I think it might, you know, because BBC effects can be really good these days, but they're still TV grade. They're not film grade, let alone Peter Jackson grade. So you can just picture the post-episode comments already, right? As if Jackson's presence behind the camera should have made everything look better by magic. But it won't. So you can imagine the dissatisfaction out there, and maybe even Jackson would be frustrated by it too if his name was to be on something that just didn't look as good as he's known for in his filmic output at the present time. Now, maybe for those kinds of reasons, Jackson might ask for an episode that is unlike what the majority of people know him for, something that's light on effects, maybe light on the action, something that a fan of maybe Heavenly Creatures or Forgotten Silver would watch and say, ah, yes, the boy's still got it, but which would seem totally and utterly alien to many Jackson fans out there who haven't seen some of his earlier stuff. Now, that could be the plan, but thinking a bit more on it, would that really be a smart move? Would we have all this anticipation leading up to the capital letters Peter Jackson episode of Doctor Who, particularly in the mass media, let alone fandom, and when it goes out, it's light on effects, and it's light on action, and it's light on virtually all the things his audience know him for, or at least the majority of his audience? You can imagine the comments now, well, what the hell was the point of getting him in for? Anyone could have done that. Which does lead me to one rather depressing thought about Peter Jackson doing Doctor Who, and that's that he's going to be damned if he does from some quarters, regardless of what the episode is like. I mean, he brings a name to the series that I'm not sure the series can properly carry. And that might sound like sacrilege to some, but trust me, I say it with no malice at all. I just think a Peter Jackson episode could bring trouble. And it's trouble that's not even on most people's radars yet, because, put simply, the expectations will be massive, and not all of them will be met. The simple divide between having an effects-heavy episode or a non-effects episode, like I was just mentioning a moment ago, is already something that can't be straddled. If he does one, it won't be to his standard, and if he does the other, it's not what the majority of people know him for. And that's just one issue. Now, does this mean I'm starting the Stop Peter Jackson Club after finishing this audio? No, not at all. I like Peter Jackson a lot. I've known him for a long time, being down here again in ANZ. We've known of him in Australia since his Bad Taste days, you know, his very early splatter films, and so on. So I've known him for a long time, and I like his work, and, well, aside from getting a touch of the George Lucases when he was making The Hobbit and turning it into a special effects exercise, and one film too many, I've really enjoyed his output. And not only that, I like his attitude in general. I like his love of history. I love all the small things he does around that, like World War I aviation that doesn't get 1/1000th of the press that his other stuff does. In an old job I had, I even stood in front of him while he spoke for a few minutes to some film bloggers I was handling at a film premiere. It was The Lovely Bones, to be precise. Also met Susan Sarandon, which was quite exciting, but I digress. So I've even been up close and personal with him and sort of looked in his eyes while he's spoken, and I think he's a cool, genuine, fun, passionate guy. He also adores Doctor Who. So who in their right mind would say, no, thanks for your interest, but we don't need you to do Doctor Who? Well, no one, right? So roll on the Peter Jackson episode. It'll be great publicity for Doctor Who. He'll have a ball doing it, I'm sure. I'm just worried what the reaction will be once it comes out, because once you become a certain size in the entertainment industry, everything's scrutinised at a level that others wouldn't be scrutinised at all if they did the same material. To close, Jackson's on a hiding to nothing, as we like to say around these parts when it comes to pleasing people with his episode. An episode we won't even see for a year or more, an episode that probably hasn't even been written yet. But you know what? I'm still quietly proud that our little show will feature his work at all. I'd much rather that this collaboration happens than doesn't happen.
Is it the TV on? Did we... Oh, he leaves the TV on, didn't we? Is it Doctor Who night tonight?
Is it?
Yeah. Fantastic, because it means on the other channel, there's...
The Walking Dead!
Yeah, let's go. Cool. I've got it.
I think my biggest... I got a couple of question marks over over hell-bent. Firstly, the Doctor, let us not forget, has spent 10 years mourning Gallifrey and then recently searching for it. And remember at the end of last season, he was crying and smashing up the console because he thought he'd found Gallifrey again, but he hadn't, and he'd been denied and he had his heart broken. This is a man who powerfully, powerfully, powerfully yearns to go back to Gallifrey. So when he finally did, he spent 3 days hiding in a shed, and then he told an old man to do one. And that was pretty much it. After that, it was all about Clara and going on the run again. And I'm just not entirely sure that that's consistent with how much he wanted to go back there, because he didn't achieve anything or do anything. And obviously, it's just the big reset button again, and now he's kind of on the run from Gallifrey, kind of not, but business as usual, really. Just seemed a bit wrong. My other problem is, would the Doctor, who, okay, he's a war hero, he saved Gallifrey, he ended the Time War, blah, blah, wow, amazing. Yes, he's a folk hero on Gallifrey now, that's fine. But would even he have the authority, the moral authority, and the kind of popular support and mandate, if you want to liken him to Jeremy Corbyn, to tell Rassilon to get off Gallifrey? I mean, Rassilon, let us not forget, is one of the founder of Time Lord Society. He invented time travel. He probably invented regenerations. He is the most legendary figure of that society. You think back to the Five Doctors, you think back to every reference to Rassilon throughout the history of the show. And he is, even there in the Cartmel Master Plan, you had Omega, Rassilon, and the other. And even if we buy into the Cartmel Master Plan and the other jumped into the loom and then re-emerged years and years and years later as the Doctor, then, yes, okay, then he's fairly powerful. But people don't know that on Gallifrey. And I question whether even the Doctor has the right and the might to tell Rassilon where to go. Nevertheless, I'm glad he did. He seemed like an awfully baity fellow and quite grumpy. So I'm glad he's gone. And now hopefully there will be democratic reform on Gallifrey, perhaps a referendum whether to leave the far future or stay in the future zone. And then hopefully we can see regime change take place and democracy brought back to Gallifrey.
It took two viewings of the finale to appreciate it as a finale and not just the first part of a two-parter. I really had the sense when I first saw it that it wasn't what it was supposed to be. The ending of a series is supposed to have a bit more closure. But I guess on the second viewing, I came to my own conclusion that I was looking at the wrong aspects of the episode. And it was really about Clara and the Doctor, and not about the Doctor and all his business and the prophecy and Gallifrey and him taking over the planet. There was a lot going on, so I guess it's understandable that they wouldn't all fit it into one episode. I feel like they could have done without the Sleep No More episode, and instead just had another episode in this series. I don't know why they couldn't have done that. I'm sure there's a perfectly respectable reason why they chose to do that. But it is very curious. But now I've gone on a long enough tangent where I'm contradicting myself of how I thought it was actually a fairly good finale. I thought it was another beautiful episode, beautifully written episode. All of these episodes, this series, have been that way. They just keep getting better, I think, actually. Except for Lady Me. But that said, she was supremely less annoying in this episode than she has been in the past. I guess what really needs to be focused on is the story between the Doctor and Clara, with an emphasis on Clara. The series really was about, her her death, her leading up to her death, the thing that was going to cause the Doctor to get angry and fulfill the prophecy. It's kind of, when you think about it, it's kind of just a funny, trifly thing to be so focused on. Really drawn out death. I'm still left with the feeling that this series is very much lacking somehow. There needed to be more. The Doctor has to fight somebody, you know, he has to save the day, and it being about Clara, a companion, seemed rather small-minded. You know, I guess I wanted it to be more relevant to the outside world and not the Doctor's small world. Stephen Moffat really has just sort of been obsessive about this, the character of Clara. Can they make her any more epic a character? You know, not only has this girl been the impossible girl that has copied herself over and over to save the Doctor repeatedly throughout his timeline, but now she is part of this very, very old prophecy. It's just mind-boggling that, like, of all characters, they chose Clara to be this epic of a character. And now that we've just found out it's all because of the Master, it feels rather contrived. I'm finding it really hard to believe that Doctor Who writers would create such a long-standing trope, one that has spanned over how many seasons now? 3? Just to go back to that one moment of how it turns out Clara met the Doctor through Missy, you know, like, big deal. Is Missy really such an amazing judge of character that she could cause a event such as, I don't know, the unraveling of time prophecy? I mean, is that what Missy's objective was, it turns out, so that she could pair the Doctor up with somebody that would cause the unraveling of time? Is that what of understanding? It's contrived. It's hard to believe, but not so hard to believe that I did not and will not enjoy it in the future. It has been fun to come to that point where we all now can say, like, oh yeah, that did happen. Now I remember, now it all connects together. You know, as ridiculous as it may be, it's still awesome. And let's be honest, Doctor Who is frequently ridiculous. So I'm just, you know, putting my thoughts out there, guys. And yeah, it's, also I might as well mention the episode before the finale, the Confession Dial episode. I thought that one was very interesting. And in terms of relating to the finale, did anybody else kind of think that the Doctor wasn't, though he was speaking with Clara through the episode, it wasn't made obvious that he was going through the motions of spending 4 billion years just to save Clara? Like, the connection there really wasn't obvious in that episode, and it should have been because it was a big deal in the finale. Did anybody else think that? Tweet me your thoughts, I'd be interested to hear. And it's been a pleasure contributing to the Doctor Who show. Thanks for having me. Take care, my fellow Doctor Who fans.
I think for me, the best story of this now dead 9th series was the first story, sadly, with Davros and the Daleks. I thought that was absolutely amazing. And if that was where the series was going, then that would have been wonderful for me. The question I have now, which is currently unanswered, is how did the Doctor already have his confession dial on him in that first story of this year, when he only picked it up at the end of having been trapped in it in Hellbent? I don't know if I'm being silly or if that's actually a bit of a question mark. But that story, and obviously Julian Bleach's Davros, was the performance of the year. again, but it was absolutely amazing. After that, I think the two-parter with the, you know, Under the Sea or whatever it was called. Yeah, looking back, probably not as good as everyone thought it was at the time. And the two-parter with Ashilda, I think, was let down by Maisie Williams. And I don't mean that. I don't mean to be nasty, but she wasn't perhaps quite as strong in that role as she could have been. After that, the Zygon story should have been a real return to form and should have put things back on track. For me personally, I just questioned some of its agenda, really. I wasn't sure if the writers were trying to educate children or speak to adults, because it didn't, it felt like an adult show going out at an adult slot, and yet it was a very simple message. But so it just it felt a bit clumsy. The story was fine. I mean, there were some ludicrous moments, like the soldiers outside the church. That's probably going to become an expression, like jumping the shark, isn't it? The soldiers outside the church moment, where a show is quite stupid. After that, obviously, yes, Sleep No More. There's nothing really to be said in the defence of that story. Oh, dear Lord. And Face the Raven was basically a run around in search of a good 5-minute ending, which it got, which was then undone a couple of weeks later. Incidentally, I wish Doctor Who magazine hadn't spoiled Clara in that waitress uniform in that diner, because in retrospect, that's what they did with their cover. Where do we go now? Next, we had Heaven Sent with the Doctor on his own. Some people had kind of assumed or guessed or theorised there might be more than one Doctor in it. That would have been good. Everyone thought it was an amazing episode. I'm very pleased for everyone who has that opinion. I thought it was quite good. I thought it was okay. I mean, it wasn't... I thought it was fine. And then Hellbent equally was very nice to look at. I'm very conflicted, actually, about Clara. I thought her death in Face the Raven could have been more heroic and stronger, but now it's been kind of undone, and she's got this infinite part of her life to go and have new adventures in a TARDIS with Ashilda. A lot of people have said, hey, let's have a big finished drama about Clara travelling with Ashilda. I can't think of an idea for a spin-off that would have less sense of jeopardy about it. You've got an immortal woman travelling with a woman who can't die because she's already technically dead. So in every adventure of that Clara and Ashilda show, they'd land somewhere, they would face absolutely no danger because they cannot be killed, and then they'd leave again. So not quite sure how that would work, but fair enough. My idea for a Doctor Who spin-off is you set it right back at the invention of the TARDISes. And you know how a console has six panels, and the idea was initially you'd have six Time Lords piloting a TARDIS. Well, let's have a crew of six on a TARDIS that gets lost, can't return to Gallifrey for some reason, and within those six people you have a kind of Firefly-like interplay of, you know, personal tensions and rivalries and romances and almost, you know, soapy kind of stuff going on there. But in some ways it could be a bit like Doctor Who. They're still going to land somewhere every week. They're going to have some kind of adventures. They could be time travel-y. They could be explore-y. They could encounter all the same foes the Doctor does. Does anyone else think that would be a good idea for a spin-off? I'm putting it on this podcast so that if it happens at any point, I can point to this and say, that was my idea. Although I'm aware that probably lots of other people have had that idea as well. That's the problem with having ideas for spin-offs. There will be a spin-off next year. It's going to be called Class. I believe it's going to be broadcast next year. It might be the year after. It's going to be written by Patrick Ness, who is a phenomenal kids writer, and if memory serves, he's responsible for quite an amazing Twitter charity thing that happened this year. It was one of the Patricks. There are quite a few Patricks that write for children, but I think it was Patrick Ness. But anyway, hats off to him and much kudos. So there's a lot to look forward to next year. There are obviously these big questions that Moffat has left. Presumably, if this was intended to be his exit, then he probably didn't really leave them as anything other than tiny breadcrumbs for the next showrunner. This thing about the Minister of War and the you know, where does Gallifrey go from here? Who's the Doctor going to travel with next? How is he going to adjust to life without Clara? There are lots of things to look forward to next year, and I am... by and large, I know I sound grumpy, I'm sorry. I did love most of the show, and obviously even bad Doctor Who is better than a lot of TV, which is rubbish. So I'm going away now for a year, and I will come out of my box when Series 10, can you believe that? Series 10 of Doctor Who comes around. So until then, everyone... stay tuned to this podcast, because in January it's going to become something slightly different, and I'm going to be part of that. So it'll be nice to have you along for the ride. And stay well, everyone, and have a fantastic Christmas. And I think some of you are probably going to see Star Wars or something. Yeah, enjoy that too. Ring my friend, I
said you called Dr. Robert. G'day everyone, Dr. Robert here with the test results for both Heaven Sent and Hellbent, and with that, my thoughts on Series 9 as a whole too. Hasn't time flown? Anyway, solid. That's probably the best thing I can call this series, Series 9. Solid. I mean, for these last two episodes, Heaven Sent and Hellbent, allow me to say up front, I give them a 9 out of 10 and an 8 out of 10 respectively. I mean, these are scores which sit pretty constant with the scores I've given all season, basically 8s out of 10, aside from the Mark Gatiss episode, Sleep No More, where I gave it a fairly low 6 out of 10. And this hasn't been by design, mind you. I wasn't trying to be clever or cutesy this series with the way I was scoring. Indeed, going into this final episode today, Hellbent, I was pondering, will this finally be a 10 out of 10 for the series, or at least equal the 9 out of 10 I gave Heaven Sent last week? Because, trust me on this, I've been open to all sorts of scores this series, but it seemed to nearly always hover around the 8s out of 10. Sometimes only just, sometimes, though, knocking on a 9. But a lot of 8s nevertheless, and now that it's all over, I can average my scores for the entire series, and it sits at an average 7.9 out of 10 per episode. Which is solid, right? I mean, nothing that totally blew my socks off, but some went close. And it was basically a near constant stream of episodes I was intrigued by and enjoyed watching, peaking with Heaven Sent last week before Hellbent was close, but not quite a 9 out of 10 as well. You know, I think if the climax of Hellbent had been Clara once again going stoically to her death in appreciation that she's had a good run, but ultimately brought herself undone and it was time to pay the piper, I think it might have been a 9 out of 10, possibly a 10 out of 10 if done really well. Instead, I got the feeling Stephen Moffat wanted to play up the Clara Who angle a bit because it was something he'd been criticised for, especially during Series 8, and he even worked it into one of Capaldi's lines when he said, Clara Who? But I'm digressing again as usual, aren't I? I think, overall, this was a much better series than last year. In Series 8, I only really liked Deep Breath, Listen, and Mummy on the Orient Express. I mean, I didn't even like Flatline, which everyone seems to rave about, but... you know, we're talking about this series, I guess, so let's get back to Series 9, which I think was solid. And to run over the episodes briefly, Heaven Sent, I thought was fantastic. By now you've likely heard and read a dozen different takes on it, so let me just say that, like some out there, yes, I was worried what the kids would make of it. I worried that it was a piece of TV with concepts and a storyline which might whoosh over the younger kids' heads, and even the sporadic appearance of that spooky wrapped-up figure with its attendant flies wouldn't be enough to keep their interest. But you know what? There have been moments all series where I don't think this was for the kids. Almost as if the production team knew they were going to go out at a certain time of the evening, in the UK at least, and that the older Doctor hasn't been resonating with younger fans anyway, so sod it. Let's make a series with more adult concepts than in the past. Because, hey, the kids aren't going to watch it anyway. Maybe that's a slightly cynical way to look at it, but I think it's undeniable that this series was pitched just a little older than usual. Hellbent, meanwhile, wrong-footed a lot of people, even myself to some degree. I think people were expecting more of an action episode, yet aside from a few scenes like the aborted execution squad or some weeping angels, you know, dashing about in the cloisters, this was largely a talky character piece, switching back and forth between characters interacting on Gallifrey and the Doctor interacting with Clara on Ashildur's TARDIS. And isn't that a weird thing to say? Ashildur's TARDIS? But I digress. That wrong-footing wasn't even the only wrong-footing going on. I adored the way the episode sucked you into thinking Clara was heading for a Donna-esque memory wipe, but slowly it all started to turn around until it was the Doctor whose memory was wiped in the end. That's a very Stephen Moffat taking something that's already been done and then just twisting it a little bit. That's cool. But I guess it was only to some degree that his memory was wiped. He could still remember those bits and pieces, and he had a lovely conversation with Clara in the cafe about it all. And just on that, by the way, earlier I said Hellbent lost a mark or two with me because of the way Clara cheated death in the end. But I guess it also didn't win any favours for me with the way that whole cafe thing was set up. I mean, how did they get the Doctor to go to Nevada? And where did he get the truck with no money? And how did Ashildur and Clara know he was going there in order to grab his TARDIS and set up the cafe and have it sitting there and know that he'd even stop there? And, you know, and where'd they find that pretty outfit for Clara? I mean, it seems an awfully elaborate sort of backstory to set up this meeting with the Doctor, to be able to hear that story from him, and then, you know, they can go off in the TARDIS and leave him his TARDIS and so on. Yeah, just a little elaborate. And why is his guitar changed? You know, being the same model as Angus Young uses in AC/DC now, and with the episode called Hellbent, I was waiting for some Highway to Hell, or as one Facebook friend said, maybe Hell's Bells. That said, I did like the rendition of Clara's theme on the guitar. It's sad, and possibly the last time we'll hear it. Well, I hope so, at least. As I've said many times before, I think Clara stayed a series too long, even if, ironically, the series she stayed on for was a series better than the one before it. And if we start having Clara flashbacks or her theme woven into Series 10, I don't think I'll be too pleased. We do need to move on. We needed to move on 12 months ago, really. And there you have it. Series 9, which, given my busy life, only seemed to start a few weeks ago, is now over. The mysteries are mostly solved. Capaldi was brilliant. Coleman turned in a performance that took away the bad taste of some of Clara's stories from Series 8. Maisie Williams, although panned by many, got better with each episode she was in. Missy was a surprise non-starter after her appearance in the first two episodes. She's a cert to come back next series, though, eh, folks? And some new blood entered the series in the form of my countrywoman, Sarah Dollard. We also had another female writer join us in the form of former Torchwood writer Catherine Tregenna. And Stephen Moffat, who, like Maisie, seems to attract haters like flies, still wrote episodes that everyone declared were fantastic before going back to panning him and forgetting he wrote the better stuff all series. It was, I guess, all in all, typical modern Doctor Who. And I really liked it. Thanks for listening to the Dr. Robert segments in the review show this year, and I hope to be in your ears again in one form or another very, very soon. See ya.
And girls, Disneyland proudly presents our spectacular festival pageant of nighttime magic and imagination in thousands of sparkling lights and electro-synthomagnetic musical sounds. The Main Street Electrical Parade. Woo!
Hello.
Oh, well, I'm so excited after last time when I wasn't so excited.
It's been an exciting couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yes, hello, little bird.
Hello.
Well, why have you had an exciting couple of weeks?
Because I've been watching Doctor Who.
You haven't. I haven't. No, I have really.
Thank goodness for that.
Yes, sir. It's, it's exciting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you excited?
Because Clara isn't dead.
It's so joyful. I'm so happy about that.
You know, I tweeted you something, but I'm not sure you saw it. I found a link to Clara's fashion.
Oh, yeah, did you?
Well, it was in the Daily Mail, which for any overseas listeners, you don't need to know what that is. It's a horrible newspaper. But they had a link to some of her clothes. Guess what the jumper's called that she had on?
Go on. This,
it's called the hybrid jumper.
It's called the what?
Hybrid jumper.
A hybrid jumper?
Yeah. Oh, actually, wow. Called a hybrid.
Wow.
I was excited.
So the Daily Mail have stolen our idea?
Daily Mail have stolen our idea, but...
How dare they? That's really annoying.
It wasn't a particular section, it was just where you can find her clothes. Topshop is interesting.
Topshop, okay. Have you bought any?
No, they've sold out of the hybrid jumper.
Oh, you had a look. I remember that Rose's clothes came from Punky Fish.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But I did think that my breasts might not look quite as nice as Clara's, because hers were looking very good in that jumper.
I hadn't noticed.
Of course you'd notice.
No, I had really. So, what have you got to tell us?
Well, that was the first thing. Nice to see you back so soon. Normally we have to wait
until the regeneration.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, there she was. Yeah. I mean, I can't even put into words how much I enjoyed Heaven Sent. It was... I think it's the best episode that there's ever been.
Do you think that's the best episode there's ever been?
I think it blew me away.
Did it?
Absolutely blew me away. What I don't suppose you've ever read the Dark Tower series by Stephen King, have you?
I haven't, no.
Very similar to that episode.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been written down for it because I got lost in it.
Did you? Well, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh. Oh, well, I mean, I did notice that in both episodes he eats a bowl of soup.
Yes.
Now, in the second episode, which, you know, is it Hellbent, the second one, or Heaven Sent? I got mixed up.
Heaven Sent and then Hellbent.
Hellbent. It was Heinz tomato soup. It had to be, didn't it?
Yeah, but it's probably Heinz.
In a giant oyster clamshell or something made of bronze, which, of course, you'll find on Gallifrey, but that was Heinz tomato soup.
Yeah. What other soup is there?
I don't know. They're advertising Heinz tomato soup on the radio at the moment. No, it must be on Planet Rock, because that's the only commercial radio station I listen to, so it's bizarre to have an advert for soup on Planet Rock, isn't it, eh? Rock on, man! I'm eating me soup! Barbara Windsor does the voice on it.
Ah, well,
but she's
speaking
saying
of
things
advert-
like, oh, Heinz tomato soup dribbling down my chin.
Oh, she's dirty, yeah. Isn't she?
And she says, I love it with a crusty roll. Hey. I'd love a crusty roll with Barbara Windsor.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't? I was watching the other day and I thought, who's that? I recognised that face. And it took me about, in the middle of the night, I sat up and thought, oh, bloody Osgood. Osgood's in an advert.
She's in a Maltesers advert.
Yeah,
she's a comedian, and that's her partner, and I can't remember what either of them are called, and I haven't watched the probably on BBC Three, their series.
She's everywhere.
Called.
All the time,
yeah.
Now.
Ooh, it's quite a cheeky advert, that.
Yeah, well, there she was, that's good.
Yeah. Right then, so we've done one episode. I noticed we got onto Clara's clothes quite a lot.
Yeah.
We discussed the series, and early on in the series, we were quite highbrow, believe it or not.
We were, weren't we?
Because we're both designers, and we know a thing or two. And we spotted some chairs. But we dropped that.
We did, yeah.
I don't know why, because there was some chairs in that episode, in that castle.
They designed chairs, though.
Yeah. What, sorry?
Designer chairs.
I don't think they were. So obviously, maybe they picked up on that as we picked them out. Maybe it was too much attention being taken away from the episodes. We talked about chairs and we moved on to fashion. So what have you got written down for the finale?
Well, first of all, I know it's getting sort of jumping ahead into the episode, but I love the TARDIS that you went in Gallifrey.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was, wasn't it?
Oh, I hope they bring that out for Christmas present. It'd be great.
Yeah, and it's just right. Okay, how excited are we that it's disguised as an American diner and Hashilda and Clara are zooming around the universe in it?
Yes, amazing. I love the idea that there's another TARDIS and that they're off. And when at the end, when they went in opposite directions, I wonder where they're each going to go and when we're going to see Sheldon and Clara next.
I don't know, but I hope it's soon. Now, I didn't know this would come up this quickly, but, right, Clara is stuck between, she's between heartbeats, isn't she?
Yes.
Not dead, she's between heartbeats. So her heart's not beating. And also they said that she's between breaths. Now what's bothering me is what if she's mid-fart?
Oh, hell.
Or worse, got a turtle's head.
Oh, an eternity of hell.
Yeah.
Although some people enjoy that.
Do they? Well, alive. I'm glad this is the last one. We've really sunk to depths now, haven't we? I've not even mentioned Dr. Pooh.
Dr. Pooh!
Okay, we better move on.
I didn't know that would take that turn.
I know that what would have moved you, I'm betting. You're sad about how sad the Doctor was when he lost his memory of Clara.
Oh, it was heartbreaking. I've written here, it was sadder the second time round. When she died, when she thought she'd died, it was sad, but I was sort of expecting it. Like we said, we knew it was coming. Sorry.
Right, yeah.
Knew it was coming, but this time round, it was just heartbreaking because it happened all over again and he was so excited to see her. And then he lost all memory of her. It was heartbreaking.
Got someone texting to tell you you're on a podcast?
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent.
Boom, Earth, I can hear you.
Yeah, you're sounding really great, man.
Thank you.
And also, did we notice, because we can sing this then maybe, I don't know. When the Doctor first went in the diner, the version of Don't Stop Me Now from the Mummy episode last series was playing by Foxes. Don't Stop Me Now. And when they announced that this singer called Foxes was going to be in Doctor Who, have you heard of Foxes?
No.
No, I hadn't. But I immediately bought her album and put it in my collection. And I've not played it. I haven't a clue what the songs are like. But I thought I'd better, you know.
That's one for the next two.
It's a bit of memorabilia, isn't it? But yeah, that was playing. Don't Stop Me Now.
Well, I knew I recognised it all. When he was there, I thought, is that where they were? I think it was one of the first series when Matt Smith was in, or the very first opening episode, and they were there, and he had his Stetson on.
Mm. And I've been in the cafe. It's in Cardiff Bay.
Ooh.
But the view out the window is not that.
Oh, that's. They should put some graphics on the window to make you feel as though you're in the world.
Yeah, I think so. And right, movie references. I've got a television reference, right, because I'm going back to Heaven Sent now in that castle and the Doctor wandering around it and doing, like, little quests. It reminded me of this kids' programme that used to be called Nightmare.
Nightmare is my favourite programme of all time.
It was really, like, cheesy computer graphics with a kid in, like, a helmet and three other of his mates guiding him, wasn't it?
Yes.
Take one step to the left. Spellcasting! Yes. Did you ever get jealous of the kids and want to go on it?
Yeah, I used to want to go on it all the time.
And how does the theme tune go? Because every time I do it, it goes into Blockbusters.
I was going to sing Blockbusters. That was in my head.
Is that the only right?
Blockbusters. I don't know. I'll have to find it. But it's something like that.
Because it used to start with do, 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 do. It's not it at all, is it? That was Battlestar Galactica, I think.
Oh, it was the best programme ever.
Oh, well, so there you go. It reminded me of that. And I don't know if we've got... Have you got any movie references this time?
Well, they mentioned The Matrix a few times in the second one, which, you know... So
they did mention The Matrix, yeah.
They did mention The Matrix. I thought, well, that ties in. But is it Razzalon? Is that the guy
Razzalon.
That was... I thought he reminded me a bit of Mumra from...
Right, Mumra the Ever-Living.
Mumra the Ever-Living.
Take these ancient bandages and transform me into Mumra the Ever-Living.
Obviously he didn't look like a Mumra, but it was just his attitude. It was a bit Mumra-esque.
I'm just thinking, now that you mentioned The Matrix, I'd like to see Keanu Reeves as Rassilon or something.
Whoa, there's a bomb in the TARDIS. Dude.
Well, I mean, that's my only two ones, the Matrix, but they've made it too obvious. They said we're in the Matrix.
They did. It might be a slightly different Matrix, but maybe not. What did you think of those slidey monster things guarding the Matrix?
They were strange. And it was there was quite a lot down there. Oh, that poor Dalek. I never thought I'd hear myself say that.
Poor Dalek?
It wanted to die and it couldn't. It was stuck.
Those weeping angels was there as well, weren't they?
It was good to see them again. And was there another one as well?
Cyberman.
Yeah. Ooh. Lightning.
Well, what have you got a comment about the series as a whole, since this is our last...
Well, I've got to say, it's the best series I've enjoyed in a long time.
Is it?
And I can't decide whether it's just because of this podcast and how much I've enjoyed watching the programme for different reasons and making my notes, or whether it's just been excellent. But by all accounts, everyone said it's been good.
Yeah, so well, it has. It's been all right, hasn't it? And we've got a Christmas special with River Song in it, and she's got a sonic trowel, and the Doctor's sonic screwdriver's back.
Matt Lucas,
Greg Davis is in it.
Yes, yeah, and the sonic screwdriver, I was happy to see that.
So that's another one to buy for Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, just in time. What were the chances? I did like the, when, I don't know the character's name, but when he regenerated into a woman.
Oh, the general, yes.
Yeah, how did you cope with all that ego? That made me laugh.
Did it? That was a joke for the girls.
Yes. Sorry, Bob. It was a funny one, that.
Well, and...
Oh, and when the doctor said that death was basically just man flu for a time.
Yes, that's funny.
Yes.
I've enjoyed these little sessions very much, and I've learned quite a lot. And it's been nice to just go through a back catalogue of 80s movie songs.
Yes.
And I think... Since we've talked about The Matrix and Keanu Reeves, do you know God Gave Rock and Roll to You from Bill and Ted?
Yes.
We could go out by a Kiss. We could go out on the chorus of that if you like.
Yep.
And I thank you very much for doing this for me.
Thank you.
Well. That's been brilliant.
I've enjoyed it massively.
Okay, right. And thank you to all of you at home. Right. Two, three. Bob, God gave rock and roll to you.
Everyone, yay! Hey! I can't remember what the relevance of that was, but I enjoyed it.
It was a really tenuous link to Keanu Reeves and The Matrix.
G'day everyone, Dr. Robert here with a public service announcement. People, if you've been enjoying the Doctor Who Review Show, that's the show you're listening to right now, I implore you to stay tuned to this iTunes channel or this Podbean network or the dwshow.net or however you're actually listening to me right now, because starting from January 31st on these very channels, these networks, these websites, things... We will have a new Doctor Who podcast, a new Doctor Who show called The Doctor Who Show. And it's going to be great. We've got some new people coming on board. We've got some brand new segments lined up. We've got all sorts of fun stuff happening. And I think if you've been enjoying what we've done here on The Doctor Who Review Show, you will really enjoy The Doctor Who Show. Now, with that out of the way, I do want to say something else, and he probably won't want me to, but I do want to say a warm thanks to producer Andy for putting together this Doctor Who review show. It's been sensational sitting through Series 9, being able to review the show for my Dr. Robert segments. It's been great hearing from the rest of the team on what they have to say, and it's all been put together by you, Andy, and it's been fantastic. I know what a slog it is to put together a podcast from having done them in the past and about to embark on another one in January. So I know how much it can take out of you, especially when you're doing it weekly or fortnightly. And I just want to say warm thanks for doing it and for making such a great show. And I'm sure everyone out there who's been listening would say exactly the same. So without any further ado, yay for producer Andy. And do tune into the Doctor Who Show in the new year. I think you'll love it. The Doctor Who Show. Where too much who is barely enough.
You have been hearing Beth, Al the Hymn, Andy, Rob, Little Burr, Lex, Ian and Kate. Our special guest was Russ Leach. You can find out all about us at the dwshow.net and find us on Twitter and Facebook by searching the DW Show, that's with a capital D and a capital W, and you can email us at hello@thedwshow.net. The DW is in capitals. Our theme tune is by Dominic Glynn and is available as part of the Gallifrey mixes on Amazon and iTunes. Thanks for listening.